for October the 31st, Halloween 2014. We talk about LucasArts games coming to GOG, Ace Attorney Dual Destinies, and we ask you about your favorite scary moments in games. Welcome to the 81st level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. So I just realized in listening to our roll call that I consistently open shows with "My name is Cole Ross," and then you guys go with the far less awkward "I'm so-and-so."
It only works for us because you've kind of set that precedent, though.
Oh, yeah. That we're not just saying names, that these names belong to the person whose voice you're saying, you're hearing.
Because that's a legitimate concern. You know, they might have thought they just, you know, logged into the Saying Names podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's part of like an ARG. It's like a numbers station, except it's a names station.
It's a podcast for people who loves names.
It's a podcast for people who have names. Number one on the iTunes charts.
Have you actually? I met a dude once who had no first name. It was kind of interesting.
What?
Yeah, he was an Indonesian fella. I'm assuming just like in his culture that. You know, which just how it is. So, like, he was a waiter at a restaurant, and his name tag said, like, FMU, or like, where his first name would be, which we asked, and it stands for first name unknown.
They're
like, all capital letters.
Instead of a name tag, there was just a hole torn out of his shirt.
True fact, my dad has no middle name.
Huh.
Yeah, so whenever...
What happens if he becomes a serial killer?
I do not know. Whenever he has to sign it, he just puts down T. And I asked him, I was like, just one day, I was like really embarrassed. I was like, what? I can't believe I don't know this. What does T stand for? And I found he's like, oh, nothing. It's just, I could put any letter there. It's just T somehow is what I landed on. It's easier to be consistent.
Yeah, it does sound prim and proper, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See, I feel like I would go with something like off the wall, like Z with umlauts.
Zoomlauts? Did you just say zoomlauts? Because that would be amazing.
Zoomlauts. That's actually the technical term for a Z with umlauts over it. They're zoomlauts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's when you put a zoomlaut over a letter, you say it too fast for anybody to hear.
Hey, are you Scandinavian? I couldn't tell.
This is dumb, you guys. I want to lead off with an announcement, though. Is that cool?
Yes.
Yes. So this is going live across the entire network, but we want to make sure that you're hearing this as well, because every episode could be somebody's first.
Or their last.
Bump, bump. Tomorrow is not a guarantee.
But Halloween's soon. Oh, so, whatever.
This comes out today. On Halloween.
Mm-hmm. It is Halloween. Yeah, that's right. It's a spoo. We should have done spooky versions of all of our names. Oh, well, too late now. Too late now.
That's like, normally post. I'm down for all the fun trends. That's one Twitter trend that I just have no interest in.
Really?
Yeah, and then there's there's the Thanksgiving ones and the Christmas ones. Yeah. I don't know why I'm a Grinch about that particular thing, but that's like the one thing I'm not down with.
And like, you're not normally a refusenik. Like, you're generally game for most things.
No, yeah, like I'm usually pretty casual about. I think it's just something sacred about usernames in my mind. I don't know.
It's not your username. It's just your display name.
Oh yeah.
Okay. This is the second week of this show being about the goddamn Twitter API. Fuck.
I'm proud of you all.
But
is this what you wanted?
Are you not entertained? retweet if you're down. No. So on November 21st and 22nd, there's going to be a new thing for the network, a charity stream. We're calling this Duck Stream 2014 Action Edition. And what this is, it is a joint effort between the Cincinnati and Portland branches of Duck Feed, the network, to stream some games, have some fun, have some jokes, and raise some money for a worthy cause, particularly Transactive, which is a organization that aims to help transgendered youth, you know, through kind of a tough situation, any kind of transition, trying to get through, you know, get education to their families and their schools to, you know, raise awareness of what this is and generally make life easier for those people. This is something that we're, you know, at least I'm really excited about. I know Gary is as well, about taking the network and trying to do something good with it, especially in light of the recent unpleasantness. Like, let's show that gamers can, you know, can come together. Gamers, bleh. People who love video games can come together and do a thing. So the if you go to duckfeed.tv/duckstream, you're going to see kind of an evolving roster of things as they come together. In our pre-pro offline talks, we have talked about a couple of ideas. Check that out, and we look forward to having you. Cool.
Are we doing any sort of suggestion system for people?
I don't know. I mean, if you want to, you can do duckfeed.tv/contact and let us know what you would like to see out of that. I know that at least for the first part of our shift, because it's going to be kind of early in the morning, and it's going to be spookily early. I'm going to be streaming a survival horror game, and I'm trying to find something rare to do for that. So
rare didn't make many.
You could say we'll be covering the graveyard shift.
Maybe if by graveyard shift you mean like I think like 6 a.m. to no 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. There we go. But like,
but that's 6 a.m. West Coast time.
Ooh. Ben, West Coast time isn't real time.
Yeah.
Ooh. West Coast time is a ghost.
It's a plot twist. Oh, cool. Yeah. So if you have anything like any ideas, anything you'd like to see, hit us up at duckfeed.tv/contact. Use the level drop down and that will go to the proper channels. And we will consider all of it. Cool. But yeah, let's talk about this episode. The huge. Let's do some news stories. Let's do a multiplayer about your favorite spooky moments in games. And then rounding out with the games we've been playing. You guys down for that?
Let's do it.
Is that what you signed up for?
Yes.
I never signed up for anything.
Yes. It's funny, Dennis. I've never seen you enter or leave. You're just always here.
It's less signed up for and more kind of stumbled into.
Spooky mysteries.
Set up residence in.
Yeah. The brief. It is time for the brief where we talk about things that are happening in the world around us. Ben, hit us with your science.
I will blind you with my science. All right. So the story that I'm talking about this week, and I think it just came out today, is Walmart began selling used video games. So, yeah.
I have to read.
That was a twist.
Yeah, that was a twist. Now we all have to scramble. Because in the lead up, you're like, oh, I've got the big story. I've got the one that you guys probably have, which,
yeah,
you know, for the purposes of running this show, I don't know why we keep those a surprise. Like why we don't just say, here's my story. Here's this one.
Mm-hmm. I like
because
this,
we don't like this, yeah. This show to actually run smoothly. Yeah. It's no fun if that happens.
They like us to have lengthy digressions in the middle of it about how we consistently fail to run the show. So Walmart hopping into the used game business, just a shade under a couple decades too late, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, something has to survive GameStop after they crash. So here you go. But yeah, and also if you thought you didn't like Walmart that much, now they do this. I don't know. Yeah. I shouldn't put my opinion in this, I suppose, but I'm not a big fan of used video game sales.
No.
Since they tend to underbuy them and oversell them.
Yeah.
And the money does not go to the game developers. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty much in the exact same boat that you are, and I can't imagine that, like, that Walmart is getting into the, ooh, Haunting Ground is out of print. you know, let's try and sell this for a fair market price. No, it's, you know, somebody stole. Okay, so here's the thing. Most used games that you buy, especially if they're brand new, like if they came out in the past month, they were stolen from a Walmart.
Oh. Right? Fair enough.
Awkward.
I know. Ooh, man, somebody wore this. Man, somebody wore the same receipt to this party that I did. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know where Walmart's going to get all of their used games.
They're going to have to steal them.
Our inventory has not changed at all. We've been trying to start a certain type of game. The shrink is directly correlated.
They're acting on the margin.
They can steal from themselves and then write it as a tax write-off at the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, no. They could, like,
all of our games were stolen.
So that's the thing that some used game stores do, right? Is if a new game doesn't sell, what happens is they will buy back the inventory and then resell it to themselves as used so that they can resell it with a higher margin at a later time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Scuzzy.
Real scuzzy. There's nothing about that industry that is especially savory.
So a random question, is Walmart starting to get into used games more or less behind the curve than Microsoft buying Minecraft?
I think. I was going to say more just because used games have been around for longer, so they had more of an opportunity. But
yeah, I'd go with that, too. That's like a 20-year-old thing versus a 10-year-old thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so the best that I can think of is, like, if there's a larger extrapolation that you can pull from this, Walmart is a major retail, like, partner for a bunch of these, you know, for a bunch of these publishers, right? Like, as goes Walmart, so goes, you know, EA and Activision, et cetera, et cetera. Like, mm-hmm. I could imagine publishers throwing a much bigger shit fit about this 5 years ago as compared to now. Because digital is just, like, everybody is focused on that. Like, every single platform is capable of, you know, doing digital distribution. That is not the biggest, like the biggest slice of the pie, right? So Walmart going around and doing this, maybe it caused some friction, but, like, that's the only reason I can see this not making any, like, real fallout.
See, I every so often go to, like, GameStop or somewhere, you know, to look for used games, but I still never find anything that's worth the price. Like, mm-hmm. usually a used game at GameStop basically means we'll sell it for the price it is normally on Steam.
Yeah. Or, like, even worse than that, just $5 less. I mean, just, like, none of this is, like, a new observation, but it never hurts just to say it's fucking unacceptable that they do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I guess I'm not sure, like, what is the scenario where people buy these used games if they're not actually that cheap?
I mean, just there's a perceived difference. Every price in the entire United States ends in 99 because people think, oh, well, this is $2 instead of $3. You know, and something that's $5 cheaper, like, so if somebody is just going in to buy a thing, and, like, if you had two identical boxes, one that was shrink wrapped and one that was just shrink wrapped 20 minutes ago because it left a Walmart in somebody's backpack, and one is $5 cheaper, like, and you don't consider the ramifications of that, you're just going to get it. Like, and they're pushed, and there are all kinds of deals and the discount cards and everything, so they can harvest
so
your information and stuff.
The issue is more, it's not so much like a long tail issue where so much as it is, like, people selling used games for games that are still selling new.
Right. Like, that's where there's kind of the most heat around this.
Sure.
Like, as time goes on and stuff goes out of print, specifically things that are not available in digital, used games become less and less objectionable because, like, maybe that $17.99 copy of Clock Tower 3, I don't know why I just keep saying these games, probably because I'm thinking about them a lot, becomes less of an issue because there's no way to buy it new. Right?
Sure.
You know?
Enter good old games.
Yeah, I guess my issue is I feel like used games is kind of inherently flawed simply because, in my observations, they can't update their pricing often enough to really be competitive with like digital games.
No, I mean, and there can't be like there can be sales, but there has to be there's so much of a lead up that has to go with that. Whether you're GameStop, whether you're Best Buy, whether you're Walmart, if something is going to go on sale in retail, you can't just press a button and drop that price. There are circulars exactly. that have to be printed. Things have to be relabeled. Oftentimes there's, you know, special signage, shelving, like it is meant to coincide with, you know, actual like, you know, rebuildings of stores, essentially, to like, you know, change that marketing package. Right. Yeah.
So there's also a follow up to this story or like a second part of this. So in addition to starting to sell used games, they're also going to be selling the new Call of Duty game a day ahead of time. And
that's ridiculous.
And for anybody who buys the Call of Duty game, they will give them a 50% bonus for any of the used games that they sell to them as a way to like kick off this engine, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah. So they have Activision's full buy-in on this then.
Yeah. But they have a fun term that has been made for it where when you can buy the game anywhere else, it's now called the Day Zero Edition as opposed to the Negative One Edition. But yeah, I thought that was cute. Anyway, but seriously, just get Steam, whatever.
Yeah.
Wait, don't you?
This
don't
coming
you not
from the
Steam?
Only one on the podcast that doesn't use Steam.
Hey, you know, Ben can appreciate it intellectually. Like he's eyeing true. Steam longingly.
It's true, and I have games that I will be able to play on a PC. I've already invested in it. Mm-hmm. I just need to invest in the PC now.
Yeah,
dude, it's kind of like the mono effect. It's like already on your machine.
Yeah, Ben. Seriously, Ben. Like, if you give me a budget, I will pick the parts for a PC for you. I swear to God.
Nah, I mean, isn't it fun for the anticipation, right? You know?
I suppose it is, but, like, I want you to be able to purchase it.
It's been 8 years or so, right?
Yeah. It's remarkable that computer has lasted as long as it has been. I don't know if you know this
or
not.
What does a gaming PC even cost now?
I mean, I built mine for, like, $900. And it's pretty good. It's not top of the line, but it's like it's good, you know. It'll play good.
I bought a PC monitor that I will use for the gaming PC. I'm taking small steps, but I'm getting there. Don't worry about it.
I feel like this is
kind of like the guy who like every day steals a part from the assembly line for his Cadillac.
Yeah. So don't take my offer as me trying to rush you, Ben. Take my offer as an earnest effort to try and remove as many barriers as possible between you and this thing.
I appreciate that. Okay. I get that. Yeah.
I'm here for you, bud.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know what to think about Call of Duty coming out a day earlier. Like, in a lot of ways, I just couldn't give any kind of fuck about it. It makes it a little bit ridiculous that I'm even continuing to talk.
I'm kind of excited for this Call of Duty, not so much because I'm excited about the game, but more because they kind of got smacked down with the last one. I'm interested to see if they learned any lessons.
Hmm. What was the last one? Ghost?
Yes.
Okay.
The one that got like where all of the critic scores were 100s and like the aggregate user score is like 4.5.
one of my favorite screenshots on the internet really is it's a screenshot of the Steam group for boycott Modern Warfare 2 or some Call of Duty, whatever the first one was where they took away the ability to use dedicated servers, right?
Oh yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a screenshot of all the members of that group, and 90% of them were playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. We're playing the game they're supposed to boycott.
For what it's worth, I still have not bought the last two Call of Duties for that reason. But.
Cool. Slacktivism at its finest.
Yes.
Exactly. I can make a statement by not buying something. How awesome is that?
Oh, man. Dennis, you got a story for us.
I do. So I guess I'll do the real big one.
Okay.
In addition to my own kind of mini one. A lot of LucasArts games are coming out on goodoldgames.com. GOG.com, including X-Wing and TIE Fighter. Mm-hmm. Which is the one that has everyone in a huge frenzy. I've never played those games personally, but I know them by reputation.
Yes.
And then there's also a bunch of adventure games mm-hmm. coming out, including Sam & Max and Monkey Island. What else am I missing? There were a couple others as well.
Yeah, so Sam & Max Hit the Road, Tales of Monkey Island. That's already out. Monkey Island Special Edition, and Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis.
Ha.
Yeah. Man, I tutored a link to this story when it was first announced because I was really excited about TIE Fighter. And I got like a remarkable response from people who I didn't even know played video games or were like had any investment in that, because like I've wanted TIE Fighter on modern systems for a good long time now, and mm-hmm. apparently that's a thing people really care about.
Sure. Is this at all in the same DNA or lineage or whatever of like the X-Wing Alliance and those various games?
Yeah, this is the like the predecessor to those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was X-Wing Alliance the one with the grand story and you were like a part of a freighter family that was yes. drawn into the okay, that's the one Star Wars game that I really really got into. I played a little bit of Rogue Squadron. And then got deep into X-Wing Alliance.
Hmm. Yeah, that was like a mutual friend of Cole and I during high school was really, really into that. So that's the only one of these I've had any exposure to. But it was good.
Hmm. Yeah. So this is pretty cool. There are going to be more announcements coming out. This is kind of a longer term partnership. And I'd be curious, just let me do a search for, like, let's just say Loom, or I'll just do Monkey Island. That might be the better one.
Ooh,
to go.
Ooh, I'd like to play Loom.
Oh, yeah, Loom is available on Steam, and it's Mac compatible, David.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Like, I remember playing that as a kid, but I never realized that it was supposed to be a game about playing music, so I got very, very little progress.
Yeah, so the Monkey Island Special Edition is still on there. I'm wondering if this means that this stuff will never come to Steam.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I got into a conversation on Twitter with Reagan Kelly of the Short Game podcast that I guested on a little while back. And he was like, "Hey, this is really exciting." However, it's still a little bit of an oversight that they didn't bring, like, say, Day of the Tentacle. To modern systems, and I fire back. Also, Full Throttle doesn't exist. And in general, whenever this topic comes up, whether it's X-Wing or whether it's like just like any of these, this new canon of LucasArts games, there's like an outcry that says, obviously, you dummies, if you put this out there, we will buy them. And my suspicion has grown as they've just been, as it's just stayed silent and silent and silent around these, that we've built this bubble and we've surrounded ourselves with people who value this game so much, or these games so much, that has convinced us that it is a commercially viable thing. And that might not actually be the case, that anybody would buy this, especially since it's pretty common knowledge how to get a hold of them and play them. Like, the fan community has, in the absence of official versions of this, made it readily available to, play these without, buying them. And I think the biggest, indicator of whether or not that idea is true is going to be whether or not the Grim Fandango re-release is a financial success for Double Fine and Sony, or if it or if it just kind of lands like a wet fart, because that's the one that people have been crying out the most of all, because it is the hardest to emulate.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I've never really considered that before, because there's a number of ones that kind of fall under that category.
Can you give any other examples?
Well, actually, my main example, I think they have released now, which was Final Fantasy VII for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's since been released. So
yeah, 2009. That's been on PSN for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
I know, right? I remember when I heard that announcement. I was listening to a podcast on a subway platform in New York.
So when I decided over one Christmas break early in my college career that I was going to play a Final Fantasy game for the first time, you know, I did my research and people seemed to think, you know, the buzz on the internet was that 7 was the best one. And so I just kind of casually walked into a GameStop and was like, hey, you don't happen to have any used copies of Final Fantasy 7, would you? I think the guy about laughed me out of there.
Yeah.
He's like, dude,
he said they got like 11, like 11 people asking that like a week.
Yeah, like it happens several times a day.
Yeah, you made that guy's day.
Yeah. And the guy after me who asked, and the guy after him who asked.
Yeah. I'm trying to think here. Yeah, so, you know, anything that advances archival preservation of games keeps them available and stops people from having to normalize piracy is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I'd be interested to know how much work goes into, you know, making one of these. Like, that's a news article or something like that I'd really like to read. Kind of what is the kind of work behind this?
That's something that makes GOG kind of laudable. Like, their efforts are, you know, more than surface deep. Like, they go to great lengths to making sure that it will run on whatever system they say it will run on, as opposed to Steam, which will just straight up sell you a game that does not work.
Huh. I guess I didn't realize. Do they actually assist with the porting at all, or is it more just like quality assurance?
And that's about where my knowledge stops. I just know that there is an effort made to ensure that the games will run in DOSBox or whatever wrapper they put the games out in. Yeah. Which, I mean, it makes a little bit of sense that it might be a little bit on the publisher or the developer as well, because there have been games that have, you know, been released first on GOG and then brought somewhere else, like over to Steam, right? Like, I Have No Mouth and I'm a Scream is like that. System Shock 2 came out on both of those in relatively short order between each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, as a Star Wars man, have you ever played the X-Wing or TIE Fighter games?
I think I played the TIE Fighter. This is when I was really young, but my dad got a computer like Windows 93 or whatever, and it had the joystick with it. And so you use that to steer the TIE Fighter and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we would go, so there was like one where you would race through gates and it would be timed. And we did that one. But then there's one where you needed to rendezvous with the Rebel ship, the one that looks like a gun, that the end of Episode 5. You know which one I'm talking about?
Wait, is the ship that looks like a gun?
Yeah.
Oh, you know the B-Wing?
The frigate.
Oh, yeah.
It's a giant one that they're standing in at the very end of Empire Strikes Back.
Megatron.
What? I don't... What?
I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's like got kind of a grip on one end and on the other. It looks like a gun. The silhouette looks like a gun.
Yeah. But I could never figure out how to rendezvous with that, so I never got past that mission.
Yeah. Neat. So it's also exciting that they just announced it and then they were available the next day. Like, there was no lead up. There was no, like, oh boy, get excited. Q1 2015 Star Wars.
Yeah.
Everybody, get hype.
That makes me wonder, like, how many games are they sitting on, like, ready to go ports of that it's just now like, oh, press go someday.
Oh, just waiting until it's going to be most expedient to release them.
Right.
Yeah.
That would kind of be an interesting, I guess, sort of counterpoint to the question of, like, maybe they're not releasing them because they're not actually viable, which would be maybe these could be a actual asset to... Yo, I'm not a businessman, but like, oh, earnings are down this quarter. Better release the Fandangos.
Yes, the strategic Fandango reserve.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, we know there are going to be waves of content with LucasArts and GOG. So
yeah,
I wonder how many of those are ready to go.
Mm-hmm. I don't
Yeah.
It's regardless, we've waited this long. We can wait a little bit longer. I'm excited to see what else is back there. And none of this weak sauce, the dig shit.
Oh, cool. And then part two of my grind, which isn't really a grind, but I just want to call it. I think there's going to be a new kind of subgenre of first-person shooter that evolves more so than it has already, that I'm dubbing the gun ballet subgenre, which is kind of first-person shooters that are very focused on the speed run or kind of speed-based puzzle element. So I would put Mirror's Edge in this category. I would put... The newest ones that made me think of this were The Lovely Planet and Dead Core. Mm-hmm. And then Cole was kind enough to point out The Club as another kind of speedrun shooter. Although after watching videos, I'm not sure if that quite fits.
Yeah.
But it's these very high-velocity shooters where traversal is kind of the main mechanic rather than the shooting. So keep an eye out for those.
Yeah.
Huh.
The... That is Dennis Furia's Eyes on the Street.
Yeah. Yeah. I figure, you know, I might as well engage in that punditry where you voice a strong opinion or prediction. If it comes true, you know, you're a genius. If it doesn't come true, no one actually remembers that you said it in the first place. So.
Yeah.
Sports Center.
I'm going to do one real quick, guys. And I really think we just need to move through the story as quickly as possible. Because we're going to need to hop onto the quarterly earnings call. This is going to have a drastic impact on our Games and Dames initiative, you know, where we get sexy ladies to play games on Twitch in order to, for a premium, for a fee, in order to get that back. Ben, go ahead.
Is that a thing?
Not anymore. Like Twitch is getting out in front of it. And it is a hostile regulatory environment because Twitch is getting out and they're getting out and reminding everybody that they have a dress code. they want all their streamers to dress, modestly, meaning no sexually aggressive clothing. No sexually, which I assume means my T-shirt that has "fuck" written across it is out of bounds. This is a longstanding policy meant to create an open, supportive, safe environment for all gamers. We are not the fashion police, and this is not a new policy, just clarity on a longstanding one rooted in common sense. In other words, don't broadcast naked or in lingerie, swimsuits, pasties, and undergarments. So this is devastating to our new revenue streams in here. Like I am not looking forward to talking to Mercedes about this.
Yeah. My no pants gaming runs are gonna be deeply undercutted
They don't specifically mention pants.
There's
a lot of focus on topless. They're rather silent on pants.
Yeah.
All right.
So we can get Steve over here. And we have managed to rig up something that will display his balls and nothing else.
So, fantastic.
Balls play Pokemon?
Yeah, balls. Which, you know, it's funny because this actually does raise some important questions about, you know, well, obviously there is demand for this and it's laudable of Twitch, you know, to get out in front of this and, you know, not condone, you know, something that is objectively gross. But there's also stuff about how effectively can you police that? It's mostly relying on community reporting. And moreover, It is a little bit bizarre that you can stream content that is potentially sexually graphic or explicit, you know, to minors, whereas the streamers themselves are the ones being targeted by that. So what is the difference between streaming a game that does have toplessness or scantily clad women versus being topless or scantily clad yourself? Obviously, real people versus video game people, et cetera. But it is still an inconsistency nonetheless when every single fucking thing on this internet is age-gated, but Twitch is not.
Yeah, huh, although I got yeah,
is it not even they don't have anything for like mature rated games or anything
no,
like that?
No.
Huh.
No, but they do have I jumped into a PlayStation live stream of I think it was Spelunky, but they had a warning pop up and I had to agree like acknowledge that you know there might be mature content on this channel, oh. Which again it's Spelunky, so yeah. I don't. It's not related to the game, but
you
I think it might have been like
half in kind to the secret areas of Spelunky. Yeah.
No, I wish it was that good.
The sexy
hot coffee
Mayans.
Mod.
But I took that to mean like maybe the moderators will make a cuss. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah,
but it was very strange. Kind of to what you're saying, Cole, that was gated in that way mm-hmm. when so much other content can just slip through.
Yeah. Like, and I don't want to be misunderstood here. I think age gating is fucking asinine.
Well, yeah. How hard is it to scroll a little bit further back?
January 1st, then you highlight the year, scroll one scroll wheel down, and click whatever's there. Steam thinks I was born on January 1st, 1977.
Is it bad
See,
that I'm actually
it really
honest?
Bothers me now that I'm like you know old enough for anything is it weird that I actually put in my birth date? Like I don't know if this is just like my personal like OCD pet peeve.
Yeah, that is actually incredibly weird.
No, I do okay. it too. I just said I'm honest about it. Like I've always I don't know what it is. I just it's easier for me to put in my actual birthday than it is for me to make something up.
So it's easier for you to change three numbers as opposed to one?
Just the mental anguish of lying about my age is not worth it to me. I don't know. It's weird.
Ben, back
so
me
I'm
up
not,
on
I
this.
Guess I'm not arguing that it's not weird. I'm just.
I always like putting the earliest year to see how things go. Yeah.
Methuselah!
Man, this 104-year-old really likes Watch Dogs.
Yeah.
See, I always wondered about like some of the maximums. Like, you know, it's kind of we're talking the pre-roll, you know, we're speculating, you know, with enough coin flips, you know, every so often a coin must its edge. Like I've seen, you know, some things that like will get the earliest year you can put is say like the 40s. Mm-hmm. And it's like I feel like with enough people in the world, there must be some like 90-year-old grandma that is really into Call of Duty.
This is like the argument for existence of life on like other planets. Like there's this many solar systems and this many Earths. It's like there's this many grandmas and then they have this percentage of a chance of liking Call of Duty. It's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Grandma Call of Duty Drake equation.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, so it is a statistical dispersion of grandmas vis-a-vis Call of Duty.
Aren't we getting to the point where though like using that original equation for life on other planets, if it held true, then it's almost imperative that we would have encountered them by now or something like that?
My understanding, and Grant, I'm not all the expert on this, is just space is in the words of the Hitchhiker's Guide, space is really, 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 really big.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a thing where, you know, the equation says there almost has to be life on other planets, mm-hmm. but the chances of any of them ever bumping into each other are actually fairly low.
Yeah.
It's like the chances of two stars hitting one another when galaxies pass through one another is zero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I always thought it was kind of insightful, though, Stephen Hawking's statement on that.
What's that?
When, you know, talking about, like, we're putting forth all this effort to contact, you know, superior intelligent life. And basically his statement was like, yeah, that worked real well for the Native Americans and any other people group that, like, you know, Westerners have met.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it is much more of a certainty that time travel has never been invented and never will be invented, because the second that it is invented, we're just going to be harassed by people coming back in time to steal all of our water.
Yeah. Right.
Unless Waterworld is right, in which case we'll be harassed by people coming back in time to steal all of our land.
All of our dry
cigarettes.
Dry thief. Dennis Hopper, aren't you dead? Well, no, there's no drinkable water in Waterworld. They had to Kevin Costner had to piss in a sleeve and then drink out of that.
And wait, they weren't smart enough to like distill water?
What's that?
They couldn't distill water?
Yeah, they had to.
Yeah,
it was like Dune, except there were no still suits.
Yeah. He had gills. He could have jumped in the ocean and drank that way.
No,
but he still drank his pee.
Yeah. Well, no.
Wait, literally, all
you need is fire, a pot, and like a tarp.
But it's bad to drink distilled water. You shouldn't distill water.
You should die of thirst instead.
Yeah, it's out of principle. You should never microwave distilled water. That's what happened to all the water they microwaved. David, do you have a story?
No, Death stole mine.
Okay, cool.
Multiplayer.
Time for the multiplayer, where we interact with you, the listeners. See? Like that? I didn't even ask permission. I just took us right there. Took us to the net, you guys. Okay?
I'm a little bit scared by this new Cole, but damn it, I respect it.
Yeah, cool. It's authority. Let's see here. Dennis, what's the question you asked the nice people on our Facebook?
Woo is what I started with. Yeah, gotcha. It's Halloween when this episode comes out. So I asked for everyone's favorite horror game moments. Not necessarily favorite horror games, but favorite horror game moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll pick us up with Samuel Bear. If that's cool.
It is cool.
Yeah. I don't play a lot of horror games, so this may be kind of cliche, but the buildup of Pyramid Head early in Silent Hill 2. At the time, I was living in my dad's attic, playing the game with the lights on, with lights off on a huge old CRT television. The best one was the apartment level, when you look through one of the locked grates and just see him standing still, watching you. Gave me a good case of the pookies.
I said
pookies, except that it's I don't want to say spooky. We've reached our spooky quota.
don't say that word. You'll bring it here.
Ooh, yeah. No. Pyramid Head just standing calmly on the other side of that cage, watching you. Mwah. Choice.
Yeah.
How Choice can you tell he's spooky. Watching you? He's like a big metal thing.
Just standing there, like, unless he just fell asleep standing up like a horse.
I'm just saying that's a distinct possibility.
It's not evil, it's just sleepwalking.
Yeah.
That, a sleepwalking Pyramid Head is even more creepy than a regular Pyramid Head, I would say.
He pisses in a trash can thinking it's a urinal.
Oh, I gutted a pig. I thought it was a human.
Yeah. Oh no, who am I gonna share all this barbecue with? Yeah, that is a classic one. David, what does James say?
James says System Shock 2, the midwives and other cyber/organic entities finding the last vestige of humanity deep down inside them and screaming for you to kill them.
Yeah,
that's kind of creepy. That's kind of, kind of one, both actually, kind of creepy and also, kind of a what, existential dread type of thing, kind of a Lovecraft type thing.
Yeah
for sure.
Yeah,
that's actually that's a game that may or may not run on Mac that I need to check out, because that's a classic that I've really never played.
Yeah, shamefully I've never played it either. So I'm very curious about this. And David, you as a somewhat fan of BioShock would probably enjoy that, just because, DNA, right?
Yeah, I briefly may or may not have pirated it at one point, and it was actually pretty amazing. It's by today's standards, it's crap graphics. I mean, just really bad graphics. But it's amazing. It's still actually really scary.
Yeah.
And I think just part of it is It does a really good job of tapping into that part of your psyche that doesn't like being chased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pursuit is a game mechanic.
Yeah, not nearly enough of it. A weird free association in my head is, for some reason, just like I always get Ben Affleck and Dan Aykroyd confused, even though I know they're completely different people.
Wow!
It's just the names. I just, for whatever reason, those two names get muddled up in my mind. I get System Shock 2 and System Shock and Marathon.
I can see that
confused in my head.
I can see that, especially if you never had the systems to play them when you were when you were coming up. Like, yeah. I have a little bit of that with, like, especially around Marathon. I get Marathon confused with a bunch of things because it was just weird shooter I would never have the opportunity to play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Cool. Ben, what does Glenn say? There we go. I lost track.
Glenn says, even if the focus wasn't horror, I got good scares out of Left 4 Dead. It has the idea of worrying about the condition of my friends as our resources got scarce and the safe house was nowhere in sight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think tension is a good substitute for horror in a lot of instances, right? Like, that's what makes Resident Evil 4 work, right?
Yeah. I think Left 4 Dead, you know, one of the best things about that was just you ended up doing all the horror tropes just because you were under stress and not making good decisions.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Neat.
I would say that the witch is scary, but I shoot the witch every time and it's so much fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's awful. That defeats the whole point of it.
it's almost a dissonance. Like, the gameplay is very fast and twitchy and light and fun, but the subject matter is kind of horror-esque.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're not zombies, they're infected. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's about ethics in video games journalism. I love that meme so much.
It's so good. I'm very sad that the frustrated Gamergate meme that got Brianna Wu in trouble originally didn't persist. Like, I think that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Which one was it?
It's just a little kid, like, just with his fist clenched in rage and his face all scrunched up. And it had a bunch of just funny random things about Gamergate on it. But that was the original thing that kind of set off the firestorm against her.
Yeah. If you want to listen to something that's really hard to hear, go listen to a couple of the most recent episodes of Isometric. That is Brianna Wu's podcast that she does with a bunch of people on the 5x5 network. And boy, is it hard to listen to a lot of the time now.
In terms of hearing her stories, not in terms of not liking her.
Right. No, she's delightful. Like, it is a wonderful show. They laugh even more than we do.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, it's delightful. But boy, howdy. Yeah, it just gets hard to listen to. It is a testament to podcasts that it is able to convey, like, the actual toll that brings on somebody. And that kind of sounds like I am lauding that as entertainment or whatever. But, like, hearing that from hearing about that experience from somebody in their own voice, you know, adds a weight and gravity to the matter that otherwise I think is missing when you're just kind of reading a bunch of tweets on a page.
Well, yeah, Twitter by nature is... Oh, go ahead.
I imagine it gives you a better understanding of the situation, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Twitter by nature distills everything down to a soundbite, and that's one of the greatest strengths of the platform, and that's why I love it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in terms of empathy, it's probably one of the worst things you can do.
Yeah, but man, I'm just... I am astonished by her strength, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Didn't mean to go on that tear, but continuing...
Again, there's value in hitting that nail on the head day in and day out.
Yep. Just this is not normal, and it should not be the regular course of events. Dennis, what's Jala say?
She says, I'll have to go with a more recent story that isn't the most terrifying, but is probably one of the more memorable ones for me, as I like interacting with other people. I wanted to play Among the Sleep, but was talking with Slade via Google Hangout. Because I have two monitors, rather than hanging up, I put him on one screen and the game on the other, as he was up for observing and chatting as I played. Although he couldn't see what I was doing, he was having a lot of fun watching my reactions. This is my first time playing it. And while he was watching and talking to me, that first it was while I, he was watching and talking to me that I first came across this scary lady. He was actually creeped out just from listening to the game. My descriptions of what I saw and my responses. Later on, he ended up buying a copy for himself.
Yeah,
I really hope the character's name is the scary lady.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that actually is in the documentation. I mean, you're playing as a 2-year-old, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a game that I think... is on my list of games I want to play. It seemed, you know, I'm not a huge gore person, so a lot of, you know, some of the like, you know, some of the amnesias and the even some of the Silent Hills kind of turned me off. But it seems like Among the Sleeps kind of one that sort of distills survival horror down and kind of just. Distills those aspects out, if that makes sense.
Did you say you're not usually a horror person or a gore person?
Gore.
Yeah.
Also horror, but yeah. Particularly gore.
Yeah. Like there's very little
No, I'm joking.
there is very little that is outright grotesque about Among the Sleep.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I feel like a lot of survival horror games, like even if I would like them, I don't really like the, you know, the gore aspects, whereas I feel like Among the Sleep is sort of like you know, survival horror with some of, with all the distasteful elements filtered out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I think we've talked about on the show before how there's like a new baseline for enemies in games that like every enemy in every game is now some level of horror monster, mm-hmm. right? Like they're all very grotesque but what's become a benign way. And for something to be truly grotesque and have shock value, it has to go so over the top as to be, not something I want to experience.
Yeah,
right. And I mean, even though I don't like it, I think there's a place for that. You know, particularly if you're doing like, you know, like my understanding is that in the Amnesia games, to a significant degree, that's kind of some of the point. You know, stuff like that. Like, I think if you're doing something like that or like something Lovecraftian, that's very understandable. But I'm not sure that every survival horror game needs to be like that or even every action game.
Yeah, I mean, like. Not every example of a given kind of thing should be exactly like every other example of the given kind of thing.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, when you say it like that, it sounds obvious.
Sorry. Let's see here. Jeffrey Lawton, Gia Law writes in, not a scary moment, but I was co-oping Left 4 Dead with Jala and company, as you do, and we got stuck in a part where you are fueling up the stock car to escape the mall. You ride the elevator down and get a bit of dialogue where, in reference to the Dale Earnhardt type, Ellis says, wherever he is, coach, he's proud of you. Something about the delivery cracked me up every time, every one of the dozen times I heard it. Jala's friends all appropriately thought that I was losing it. So I'm going to parse that. It was a very strange sentence. I'm sorry, Gila. But there is a there is a coach who says something about Dale Earnhardt being proud of you. He's a Dale Earnhardt type. Wherever he is, coach, he's proud of you. Okay. That is a moment in a horror game. I'm sorry. I'm butchering this. It's not landing.
Wait. I mean, have you? Yeah. It's the. You know, you're going down to get this NASCAR racer's car, and Ellis, who's a huge fan of NASCAR, just starts like chatting up about this driver, and that's one of his potential lines is, wherever he is, coach, he's proud of you.
Okay, yeah, and then he sings his 17-minute long Southern rock version of Candle in the Wind.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
While he murders zombies.
Is it weird that whenever I see Jeffrey's name, I imagine like some sort of like Steven Seagal-esque action movie. You know, it's, you know, something like, you know, this geologist became a, you know, firefighter because he thought he would have a simple life. But when terrorists tried to take over the Pentagon with an earthquake machine.
I
know. This summer, Jeffrey Lawton is Geolaw.
Nice. I'll go ahead and do mine. So it'll be a little bit of a cop out if I just straight up say something out of Silent Hill 2, because obviously that is the example of everything related to horror, at least as far as I'm concerned, because I'm a parody of myself. However, this is genuinely some of the most scared I've been in a game. So Silent Hill 2 begins with James, you know, you, the character, walking down this long, foggy, wooded path from like a rest stop, you know, at the top of a mountain leading into Silent Hill. Like, all the roads are closed, so you have to walk in. And it's, you know, spooky and scary specifically because nothing really happens. It's just kind of like letting you soak in the atmosphere and hear some sounds and things like that. But as you're walking along, you get so convinced that something is waiting for you out in the shadows. Like, you know, just by the way that the camera angles are aligned, from out in the woods. And this was like on a second or third playthrough. This is like 2005 because I had a cell phone at the time, and this is going to be important. So as I'm going along, knowing full well I'm not going to find an enemy until later, I hear, Jesus, what? And then it just happens, you know, and I was like, what's happening? Like, I'm getting like really tense and like a little bit of sweat on my brow, and I mute the TV. Like, that wasn't there before. Maybe it's something to do with the chainsaw. I have no idea what. Like, man, what's it's still happening, even though it's me. I need to like leave the room. So I left the room, and I'm just like, you know, paced and, you know, like whatever. It's like after I calmed down, I walked back into my bedroom, and you know, the sound wasn't there, and I turned on the TV again, and I looked over. I looked over to notice that the cell phone, which previously was sitting in the middle of the table, was now dangling off the edge of it. Huh, that's weird. Oh, the cell phone was on vibrate, sitting on my desk, and it was ringing. I just hadn't had a cell phone long enough to associate the sound with the fact that it's ringing. So I thought it was coming from inside the game, and then from outside the game, and I got so freaked out by it. Yeah. So that is
awesome.
Some of the most scared I've been at a game. To pull something that's just a little bit more off the beaten path, haha. Probably the hotel chase from Shadow Over Innsmouth.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That would be a good one if it didn't take 6,000 tries to get through.
It wears out its welcome right quick, but it is still like the most memorable thing about that pretty good game.
In addition to the 82 tries, what killed that one for me is just the fact that I had already like found all the evidence to prove that the guy who owned the hotel was the cannibal. It was sort of like, what did I expect to happen?
Yeah. Well, there was no way to get out of town, so that's why he locked the door and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that I know. I mean, I guess that's just you have to accept the survival horror game. But that always bothered me about that game.
It's not just accept the survival horror game. It's go along for the ride. It's any kind of media. Just go along for the ride.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
Only nightmares now. David, what can you read Brandon Goodrich's responses?
Sure. First, I need to click see more. Brandon says, while Dead Space was a very spooky game, and I enjoyed it a great deal, my story is a little different. When my son was a baby, I would sit him in my recliner, with my feet sitting on the footstool. I would lay him on my knees while rocking him to sleep, and scare the hell out of myself. And as added benefit, to get some... getting some relaxed time with my son. It's pretty hard to get unnerved when you look down at a baby in a dinosaur onesie.
Wait a minute. Is that a onesie with dinosaurs on it, or a onesie made to make your your baby look like a dinosaur, because I've had some nightmares like that.
There's a show about that.
I'm hoping for the second one. I feel like that would be the more entertaining.
Yeah, it'd be adorable. Look at him. It's just... just says no in his dinosaur's onesie. It just says, "I'm the baby."
Oh, that's great.
There's a second response there, David.
And Brenda also says, "Needless to say, the baby was facing towards me and not the TV."
Yeah,
it's not, so that is important. We are not traumatizing babies with Silent Hill.
It's not like the sound is the most scary part of Dead Space.
I would be terrified. Like, I jump for nothing. Like, uh-huh. I jump every single jump scene, and I jump big. Mm-hmm. Like, Jen makes fun of me for it. It's so bad. And so I would be terrified to do what he's doing if I'm imagining it right, just because I would jump and, like, literally jolt him out of my lap and onto the floor.
Why did I oil this baby up so much?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good times.
Nice. David, how about you? You have any remarkable horror moments?
My big one, I kind of, is from Stalker, but I kind of don't want to say it because I'm hoping that someday you guys would play the game Stalker. And would totally yeah. spoil it.
I mean, I'm not going to remember anything about what you say when I eventually play it. So.
Sure. Well, basically the first part where you first meet a bloodsucker.
Okay.
It's very much the game all of a sudden switches to this creature that has an AI where it explicitly hunts you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To where basically it drops you down into an area, a large open, dark area where with a monster whose AI will actively try to sneak up behind you.
Hmm.
And it's sort of a thing where, like, it just does it.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's, it's very much like I've had. At least one person, let's say a couple people, tell me, like, I'd be like, "Hey, did you ever play soccer?" "Oh, yeah, up until, you know, this point, and then I stopped."
Like, that significantly upends that game, too, right? Because it's mostly about conserving your resources, you're fighting dumb enemies, and part of a way to conserve your resources is to fight smarter, and if something is trying to outsmart you, you lose your edge, right?
Right. And, I mean, this goes into, you know, it's a lot of what's great about that game is the AI. Its big thing is the AI is, you know, in most games, enemies are basically just standing there or patrolling, and the AI only starts once you enter the scene.
Hmm.
Whereas in these games, the AI is always going. It's always wandering around doing its own thing.
Yeah.
So it's very much a thing where, like, I routinely had, even though I'm a player that, you know, Dennis can, you know, cite his frustration with me trying to play games. You know, I'm a player that, you know, always checks corners, always watches his back, and routinely the AI would sneak up behind me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. And that probably adds to it because it's not a scripted event. It happens naturally.
Right, exactly. There's no scripting in the game. It's or at least no cheating via scripting
yeah.
in mm-hmm. the game. So, and I would say my other one just to kind of is Eternal Darkness. Just in general, really great game with the insanity effects. The bathtub scene's probably the most noteworthy, although it's kind of a cheap jump scare.
Still works.
Mm-hmm. Right. Although I think my favorite, just for being really, really simple but really effective, is when you reach a certain degree of sanity, you would be walking, and then when you would stop moving your character, the footsteps wouldn't stop for a couple footsteps. And likewise, when you would, like, walk up to a door... Often, like, when you were, like, a couple feet away from it, like, someone would start, knocking on the door real loud.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just real, I mean, incredibly simple stuff. Yeah. You know, just straight up, like, let's script this thing to happen, but really effective.
Yeah.
Can it not happen in other games because there's IP protection or something around that?
Yes, that is that is definitely the case. Nintendo has a patent on sanity meters.
Oh, yeah. Sanity meters, yes. Although, like, Dark Corners of the Earth did as well. One of the interesting things, if you ever want to kick, is read the read some of the, like, FAQs and, like, support sections for this game. Because it's just, like, I mean, it goes in-depth. It's like, if you witness bleeding walls or, you know just all these weird things they do to screw with you. Because, like, there were legitimately ones where it would, like, you would be playing a GameCube. It would pretend to restart and the PlayStation logo would come up.
I mean, the GameCube? Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
I just wanted to make sure. I didn't want people to get their hopes up about PlayStation Eternal Darkness. Sorry.
True. Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those that is my example for games that they keep talking about bringing out that there should be a market for and they're never going to actually bring out.
Yeah. Well, Silicon Knights doesn't exist anymore. So. Go
that's
ahead.
That's one of the few games where it like incentivizes you to make your like put your character in a worse position than he should be because it's like I just want to see what's going to happen now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, man, that was one of my that continues to be one of my favorite episodes of Watch Out for Fireballs, the Eternal Darkness one, specifically because of all the sanity effects that I added into it.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
People still write in about that saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. That was so good. Like, it is one of the few pieces of praise that I will just accept without being like, oh, well, it's a process.
Yeah, the phone ringtone was especially good.
Yep. Oh man, and just yesterday the Resident Evil episode is coming out. That is a similarly complicated edit, except it is wall to wall game music in it, pretty much.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, because,
is this the original Resident Evil?
Yeah, this is the remake, the GameCube remake of the original Resident Evil.
All right, to show my like gamer like lack of knowledge, was the original Resident Evil the only one that was straight up survival horror?
No.
Okay.
It was up until everything before 4 was survival horror.
See, yeah. I thought the rest of them were just like zombies all over the city, like rawr.
I mean, yeah, like the like 2 and 3 did take place in Raccoon City, but they're still like in the trappings. You know, combat is de-emphasized, puzzles are emphasized, story takes a front seat. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
At least all of them up through Resident Evil 4, including like Code Veronica, meet the hex crane criteria.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Cool. Dennis, what does Gustavo say?
He says, when I was a kid, when me and my brothers played Blaster Master, I would make them mute the music in Stage 4. I have no idea why I found that music to be scary. Other than that, games that featured fleshy levels or enemies were the worst.
Mm-hmm.
More horror games specific, The Walking Dead Season 1, Episode 1, had a scare that horrified me and punched me in the gut. I'm weak against family tragedy.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, fleshy enemies, Contra, the last. Any level that, so I assume this is any game that has a level that takes place inside of a large creature.
Yeah, but I thought like for fleshy enemies, like I said, the homunculus. There we go. The homunculus.
Hey,
kind of.
We're the homunculus. Okay.
But that's become almost like a trope for enemies in action games or shooters or any game. Like it's just ceased to have an effect.
Yeah, like the just straight up body horror enemy kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like the the warped amalgamation of many body parts.
Yeah. How about you, Dennis? What are you what like what are you most deeply afraid of?
Well, that's a totally different question. Losing my mind piece by piece. That would be that one.
Cool. Hey, high five, buddy.
Yeah. but for horror games, I went back through. I really, you know, for all that we talk about, I haven't played that many horror games. So I'm going to kind of do the cop-out Silent 2 Pyramid Head thing. But specifically, you get to the top of, I think it's the hotel, or maybe it's the hospital, but you get to the top of the roof of a building, and just out of the hospital, yeah. And you're just kind of walking, and I honestly, to this day, I'm not sure if it was just I triggered something wrong or if it was intended to be this way, but out of nowhere, Pyramid Head comes and blindsides you and just knocks you off the top of the building.
Yep.
Yeah, and it was just so unexpected.
Yeah.
And again, I jump for anything, and I certainly jumped for that. That's probably the single most scarring, moment from a horror game for me.
Yeah.
Dumb question. How do you survive falling off of a hospital?
Well, that, you fall right into the emergency room.
I think that is the moment, and you probably could have sussed it out earlier, but that was the moment in the game for me where it's like, yeah, we're not even going to pretend that any of this is real anymore. Like, you have ventured into your own personal hell now. The rules do not apply. You can fall off the top of a building and wake up somewhere else.
The mannequin legs didn't do that for you.
Well, you know, I really tried to lean in and suspend disbelief.
No, that's fine. Hey, I just said you're along for the ride. Like, it's I don't know. Like, we talked about it again, and watch out for fireballs. Like, I go whole hog on all of these. I you know, whereas I'm normally skeptical and questioning and, you know, critical, I will turn every faculty off. I will turn off every light. I will surround myself in this thing in order to throw myself over to the illusion so I can feel something for once.
Maybe it was the moment. maybe it was the moment I realized that the game was not going to be internally consistent or externally consistent. Yeah, yeah. That's so, you know, there's mannequin leg monster type things, mm-hmm. but it all kind of followed its own rules, and that's when even its own rules did not apply.
Yeah. Nice. Ben, what does David say?
David says, Silent Hill games have always been the best for giving me the chills. The creepiest moment in my gaming history lives in the realm of the tabletop. We were playing a Gumshoe Detective / Call of Cthulhu mod. The advantage of tabletop over a video game is that our DM was a good friend of many years and could personalize the experience. It was a great session that left all of us more than a little spooked at the end.
Yes, yeah. And as you round the corner, you face a monster made entirely of abandonment. No! So, that's pretty good. I've never done a tabletop horror game, so I couldn't weigh in.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know Call of Cthulhu has a big history on that. I mean,
yeah. It's a thing.
So let's do it real quick for each of us. For Cole, it would be index cards out of order, and he could never put them in order.
Yeah, so. They're behind a very very dirty pane of glass, but all the dirt's on the other side. Yep.
All right.
Okay.
Let's see. David or Dennis would be virtual pinball where the bumpers didn't work. Maybe that.
Or a game that had no harder difficulty.
It's easy mode on everything. I don't know. I don't know about you, David. I don't know about me either.
Yeah. Ben's would be just a game with glaring math errors throughout.
Frog fractions.
It'd be
also it would be made by Treyarch.
Yeah. And it'd be open world, but you couldn't get out of the car and walk around.
Yeah. And David's everything would just be scripted in a way so that you couldn't watch your back.
Yeah. Yes. And there would be no violence. Like, everything would be peaceful solutions.
I love that. I can't watch my back, but everything's totally safe. Like, I'd be like the crazy person. Yeah.
How would you know if somebody was coming up behind you to hug you?
A legitimate question. No, I loved it. I was reading it as some cracked article or something, you know, some dumb thing, but just an idea that I love the concept of is a guy relating, you know, his, you know, playing of the new Alien game. And what he did is basically, like, locked his two cats in the game room with him.
Oh, no.
So that as he's playing, they would, like, randomly attack him.
Yeah. I'm sure that was fun for the cats.
Cats love harassing people. I know, as they quake in fear.
It sounds like I'm being like, oh, protect the cats. But I'm sure it was like it was a different situation for them. You know, cats love variety, right?
Yep.
Wait, love variety, hate people. It sounds like win-win.
Hey, Ben, how about you? Notable horror moments in games.
Yeah, so mine's kind of a cop-out. I will say the beginning of Silent Hill 2 was also really good. The reason why it was really good for the time we played it, we played this freshman year of college, and I had only played Silent Hill 1 at that point. And so I was trying to get people on board with that, and we had played through the first one, but it was kind of dated, or more dated than I anticipated, so people didn't really find it as scary as I had remembered it.
Yeah.
But so then we put in Silent Hill 2, and even though that was also somewhat dated, it got pretty scary pretty quick. Yeah. So the first time under the van, yeah, that... Yeah, that caused some disruption. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so that was really great playing that. In addition to that, there's some other gems. Resident Evil 4 and the Garden Maze, I think, is a pretty solid one. Mm-hmm. And then also my roommates, I think my third year of college, had a lot of fun watching me play the first Dead Space game because Ooh. I would react very kinetically to that game. So, yeah.
Meaning you imparted a lot of kinetic energy onto the controller through a screen.
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
A lot of jumping, a lot of screaming, a lot of, oh, shit.
whole lot of oh, shitting going on.
Yeah.
I did like the ability to stomp enemies in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, like, I think it might have been, I don't know if it was Dead Space 1, but Dead Space 2, favorite little things in games, there was not just one stomp button. If you just pressed the stomp button, he would do like a confident professional boom, now this thing is dead. If you mashed it, he would just in a panicked fashion just stomp, screaming, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck.
Oh, I never noticed that.
Yeah.
Huh. Probably because I was doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a horror thing, but one of them I liked just because it was very true to like what the game was supposed to be is Dead Island. Even though I ultimately hated the game, the very first time, basically the way it introduces you to combat is you're in this like safe area, but you have to go out and like rescue something. So they basically like open the door to this pagoda, and it's very much like push you out. All right, go kill these monsters. Like go, go, go. And you know, I'd read the reviews. The game's all about the stamina system, so I was very much, you know, okay. I'm gonna keep cool. I'm gonna time my hits. You know, I'm gonna I've got this. It's just one of them. And then it's like, I'm out the door. Die, 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 die.
The best laid plans of zombies and men.
Yeah.
I think another good one I wanted to mention, too, is in Silent Hill 3, the funhouse.
Yep.
Like, so not only is all that part great, but then the hallway after that is amazingly scary.
I said my dumb, stupid thing, and I immediately regretted. I was hoping you would bring it up. Like that, the red light hallway?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
You're like, huh, that's kind of weird. Then you check your health, and you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, like Silent Hill 3, I feel like it's a little bit weaker overall, but goddamn is it scarier, I think. Like, just in we're going to confront you with some really upsetting stuff on a regular basis. Like, there are more of those moments than...
Yeah. They each have their doozies in them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like I could go on at length, but we're already running along. David, what's Slade say?
Slade says, I think the first time I was honestly scared in a horror game was the first Fear game. it was the first horror game I played where I could literally not fight back against what was coming for me. And that feeling of not being able to stop it terrified me and had me on the edge of my seat the whole time.
Yeah. So, like, fear is a weird, it's a weird situation because the times when it's scariest are also the times when nothing can hurt you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or when nothing happens.
Not even that. So, like, fear, it's a really weird game insofar as it has really, like, you know, well-considered combat. The AI is pretty good. The level design's great. It's, you know, shit's flying, you know, particles and environment destruction and everything. Like, you know, it is one of the better PC shooters I've played. But then just randomly interspersed throughout levels are going to be these little, like, haunted house sections. And nothing can really happen to you during those. When it is explicitly trying to scare you, that is where there are kind of the least stakes for what you do. So it's just like, here, we're going to give you a little bit of a breather so you can walk through and see this disturbing stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what would have rendered fear unplayable would have been if when you had your flashlight out, if Alma had just randomly shown up. In just, you know, every once in a while in shadows that you shined your flashlight on. And I waited the entire game for that to happen and didn't. But that's probably what fear does the worst is, like, you know, you're afraid of things infinitely more than you know, the stuff that actually happens.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a strength.
Yeah, that's not a sin.
It's definitely a strength.
Yeah. If they spliced fear with Slender Man.
Yeah. I feel like Fear has a couple of moments for me that were I really liked. I really loved the first time you find the room that's just full of blood, and your empath on the team just starts to talk about how he's sensing a lot of anger and hate, and your teammate just, yeah, no fuck, genius. But no, in terms of horror, I and these are both very much spoilers. I really like the transition to adult Alma.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool, and I love, it's one of my favorite endings in any game. Just the, like, really abrupt cliffhanger ending.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Neat. And I'm going to take us home with Christopher Schley, who writes in, apologies about the length. Cole, feel free to edit this down too. Christopher says he's a little baby at horror games. Cool, Chris. I'll entertain this. Let's go. In The Lost Crown, I get back to the haunted building that I'm staying at night and notice, what the hell? What is that bathroom light doing on? So I walk inside and listen to the building creak all over the place. Walk inside the bathroom and bam, the lights go out. Also, it doesn't help that there is something in the room that looks like a person when the lights are out.
Ugh.
There was also a weird one that wasn't a jump scare per se, but you spend a good amount of time in this little farming place outside of town, talking and investigating a mystery. Later on in the game, you need to go back and clarify some things, and the entire place is burned down. Something that you learn later happened years ago. When the loading screen dropped me right into that, I had an oh fuck reaction and really felt like I needed to book it out of there. It was just too creepy to me. Tell him Large Marge sent you. And then he continues with one final example. Another one was from Anna. I played the extended version for the first time a few months ago. That one did sound pretty damn well. I'm walking around inside the cottage, exploring, figuring out some puzzles, and then knock, knock, knock. Three knocks, really loud, in rapid succession. And of course, when you get to the door, no one was there. It was just me, huddling in the fetal position in my chair. A lot of door knocks. Yeah. And it was good. It's a nice short, scary game. Kind of intense to run, though. Like, it has it's not very well optimized, so.
Hmm.
Yeah, well. Cool.
Can Can I throw in some honorable mentions as well?
Yeah, sure.
Zelda Ocarina of Time, the hand monster, and the thing that sucks you in and spits you out. Both of those were pretty scary as a kid.
Well, no, and the area under Kakarito in general was kind of creepy.
Yeah. Well, the area under under Hyrule City with the Redeads.
Yeah.
Like the mass zombies who would like latch onto you and suck your life force out of your neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. What else?
They had some pretty spooky moments. Yeah, that was it.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you everybody for responding. Great question, Dennis.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah. If you would like to participate in these, look to our Facebook group every Tuesday afternoon. That is facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast.
The Grind.
It is now time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the course of this past week. Gentlemen, I'm going to propose a one-game grind because the evening grows long, and there are spooks to attend to, you know.
I skeleton second the motion.
Yes. Ben?
I don't have a Halloween pun, so I'll just say it. Okay.
Well, skeleton second barely qualifies. Like, that's not even a pun. It's just, you just said skeleton in front of another word, which I accepted prima facie as a valid thing to say.
It's at least alliteration.
Yeah. Okay.
True.
So, moving on. Dennis, since you were not here last time, I'm going to ask you to volunteer to go first.
Yeah, I've been having a bit of a mobile resurgence. I went through a long period of not really playing any games on my phone, and now I've been playing a bunch. So I'll stick to the one that's gotten most of my time, which is Spider-Man Unlimited, which is it's an endless runner like your temple runs or the like, and I might be coming to it with rose-colored glasses just because I haven't really played any other endless runners. So I like it a lot. It's a ton of fun. I don't know how much of it is just kind of standard trips for the genre and how much of it is stuff that Spider-Man Unlimited actually does well. But it's Spider-Man running along rooftops. You can kind of swipe to pick one of three lanes to run in to dodge obstacles. Swipe downwards to slide and swipe upwards to either jump or punch an enemy. Mm-hmm. And basically, you're having different obstacles thrown at you. You're having different enemies jump in your way. Your job is to avoid or hit, in the case of enemies, anything that comes your way and extend that as long as possible. So that's fun. And that's pretty generic as it goes for temple runners or for temple runners or endless runners. I understand. But where Spider-Man really gets interesting and where it earns its Spider-Man mantra is that it is also split up with, sections of web swinging. So now you're moving along a vertical axis instead of a horizontal one, and it's a much more fluid kind of tapping to swing and then releasing to kind of release the web and fly through the air. And the game really, really shines when it quickly alternates between those two types of interaction. So, running along a rooftop, dodging, ducking under a water tower, then jumping off the side of the building and flipping through an archway and back up to the rooftops and kind of going back and forth those really quick. That's when the game is at its most frantic and most fun. And you really feel like Spider-Man using those lightning reflexes, which is what it's all about. And that's a fun little experience. And you can jump in, play it for a minute and then be done.
Okay. So I have two questions for you. The first one is there any sense of progression or, when you sit down to play Spider-Man Unlimited, do you just have equal odds of seeing any kind of thing? Are there specific levels that you're running through? Is it all randomly generated? Like what are we dealing with here?
The levels are all randomly generated, but there are ridiculously deep levels of progression. Okay. So the whole story of the game is that the Sinister Six, which is a series of villains, have opened an interdimensional portal and are pulling in alternate reality versions of themselves to help take over New York City. And so as Spider-Man, you start pulling in alternate reality versions of Spider-Man to help take it back. And so, it's very fan servicey because there's all the different types of Spider-Mans and versions of Spider-Man that have shown up in all the comics over the years.
Including the Spider-Man lawyer, Spider-Man.
Yeah. I almost created a Twitter account to tweet at Gary after that to be like, you are summoned for defamation and slander of Duke's dear Freya.
So is there the Spider-Man movie 3 version of Spider-Man? Because I think if I played as him, I'd just have to keep, you know, committing suicide.
Not yet, but there are a lot of different, you know, there's like the Spider-Man armor, other M Spider-Man, it's like the Final War Spider-Man or something
other,
like that.
Other M Spider-Man, that's where he can't cast web without getting his commanding officer's permission. I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but you keep setting up
on
the tee.
No, it's good. This is the banter is what we're here for, Cole. But anyway, so you unlock all these different versions, and every single one of them has different boosts. So they all, in terms of movement in the actual game, are identical. But in terms of scoring, some might give you bonus points for getting collectibles, while others might give you bonus points for killing enemies, while still others might give you bonus, just extend your combo meter overall, so it's easier to keep a combo going. So they've each got their own unique perks that you can unlock. And then each of those levels up, but they all reach a level cap. If you reach the level cap, you can, and you have two of the same Spider-Man that come through. So it's almost got a collectible card feel to it, where you can get multiple common versions of a Spider-Man. But you can combine those to raise the level cap and level it up even further. And you need to do that so that you can advance in the main campaign of the game. And this is the one part that's kind of crappy. The main campaign is like the story of the game, and it's where you go through and figure out who the Sinister Six are and kind of progress the story. But you don't get any experience if you fail missions. And there are level requirements to advance, which means if you're not high enough level, you can't really advance by doing side quests, because you have to pass them every single time. So you have to kind of go play in unlimited mode and then come back to the quest.
So they force grinding.
I would say that, except the unlimited mode is the most fun, because it's where you're most likely to get the crazy combinations of web swinging and building running.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah, technically it is grinding, but the real, like, you know, you're not playing the game for the campaign. You're playing it to feel like Spider-Man dodging stuff with Spidey sense, you know?
Yeah. So the campaign is the grinding part then?
that's surprisingly apt. Yes, that's true.
Inverse grind.
So here's my other question, because you're talking about the reason you play this. Do you find yourself playing this consciously in order to like make progress, or is this something that just kind of naturally nestles in the crevices around other things that you're doing?
Yeah, it's totally like, I need a brain break. I will, you know, take a walk around the office and play a level of this. So it nestles nicely in the crevices. The dangerous thing, though, is it has the whole time-gated plays where like you get a new play every 10 minutes. And so if you use up all your plays before the 10 minutes,
gross.
Yeah. That's real artificial and gross. So I have fallen prey to the mentality of like, oh, you know, I've got three plays. I might as well do it three times.
Farm my carrots right now too. Yeah.
Sadly. Yes. But you know, the actual experience of playing it is rewarding and satisfying and fun in and of itself, in a way that, and I've never played Farmville, but in a way that I think those other games are not, where it's, you're playing for the progress and not for just the joy of doing it. So I'm a little bit more okay with it in that scenario. The other thing is that the game looks absolutely gorgeous. Like, it looks like it was pulled straight out of the comic books. It's way more impressive than I would have expected for a mobile game. And it's that adds to the experience. Mm-hmm. So check it out. It's a great little runner, that I think does new stuff. I don't know if Temple Run has a web swinging portion or not. but it's, you know, I've really enjoyed it for what it is. And, you know, probably in a week or so, I've forgotten that it exists, but it's fun to kind of level up your Spider-Man and you know,
take people to challenges. Litigation.
Yeah. You know, deposition them, depose them.
Yeah. So that's what I've been playing.
Neat. Who wants to volunteer to go next?
I'll go.
Ben.
Because mine's super short. I haven't played a whole lot this last week, but I did play a first tiny bit of Monaco. Mm. And I know David had recommended that earlier. And yeah.
Yes.
So I had only played like a couple levels of it, but I thought it was a cool concept. You can play with four people on the same screen, correct?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. You can.
Okay, so I only played as the pickpocket when I played, or not the pickpocket, the locksmith. But the aesthetic looked cool. The music was very swanky and nice.
Yeah.
And I only played a little bit. I'll probably continue playing, but it was on somebody else's machine. So that is, yeah, tenuous.
Huh. Yeah.
That is such a cool game.
So for people who aren't familiar with it, just basic rundown, this is a top-down heist game.
8-bit-ish game?
Retro with an AUX style game where it's meant to be co-op insofar as different people on a heist team serve different kind of purposes, right? So you have the mole who's like a digger. He can dig through walls and stuff like that and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
In that fashion, from moles.
the one slam I'll make against it, and it's a slam that's also a compliment. It has the coolest concept for visual design that I've ever seen, in that areas of the map that you can see are actually, you know, normal. Areas of the map that you can't see are a blueprint, like mm-hmm. you would have laid out on the table while you are planning the heist. And that's really, really cool, and I love the idea, and it looks cool, but it's also completely disorienting and, in practice, very unintuitive. And so, where I would have rather the parts of the map just been blank or more plain than having this cool, like, blueprint-esque style to them, because I was just constantly confused by it. Maybe that was just me, but that's the one thing that I couldn't get over for the game.
I like the idea of though, because you're not aware of anything that's happening in them, but you would have a good idea of like what the layout of the building is.
Well, I think part of it is part of its stick is, you know, once things go, you know, Reservoir Dogs style and everything's going to heck, it's, you know, the game kind of turns into, you know, a sort of Keystone Cops sort of thing where you are kind of everyone on your crack team of, you know, safe crackers is kind of just running around like a chicken with their heads cut off.
Yeah, and the couple times where I did have that happen, it was a lot of fun. I guess I never got to enough parts where that did happen. Like, I guess I had too much go right, if that's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, were you playing multiplayer?
No, just single player.
See,
which again,
I think
probably
this,
added to it.
You know, it's kind of, I don't know if we've talked in the past on this iteration of the level of this with DTR, but there's certain games that you should play with other people and that you should play with enough alcohol to ensure that things go wrong.
Just turn it into a drinking game.
Wise.
If the cops don't find you, then you take a drink.
Nice. So you got this running on your laptop, Ben?
I did not. I played this on a friend's Xbox.
Okay, cool. Nice. And like, how many people did you have with you playing it?
One. People were watching me play it, which I'm sure was entertaining. but I actually did get this game as a part of a Humble Bundle.
Yeah.
So perhaps I will try installing that on my own machine this week.
Yeah. It seems relatively low demand, but yeah.
Coin flip.
Coin flip, exactly. Yeah. I'm going to go strictly because there's something happening on Twitter right now that I want to call attention to. So Gary tweeted this modest phrase with a hashtag Stone Cold Steve Creamery under the hashtag Supper Slam. And I responded with Nacho Flan Candy Cabbage hashtag Supper Slam. So let's see what comes of this. Look for Tuesday night on your Twitter feed to see if this turns into anything.
I wish I knew enough about wrestling to contribute.
So stay posted for more details about how this turns out.
Is this like a Lou Reed's the internet style just for the Cole and Gary Twitter fiends?
A little bit, maybe. No, we do this sometimes. We throw in. I think a couple months ago we had had an epic one that I think involved like just tons of people, including like the guy, yeah, just tons of people, like about celebrity names that were just a little bit off, indicating that they were like fake impersonators of that celebrity.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Such as Edward James Almost and Ed Vaguely Jr. I think was the one that got that started. So. So yeah, that was a fun little progression. Continuing into games though, oh man, so Ace Attorney Dual Destinies. I know I talked about it again a little while back. I picked it up again thanks to a conversation I had with Bob Mackey in Portland about visual novels and such, and he was playing it. And I realized, oh, that game I bought a year ago I never beat, and I would kind of like to see the end of that story. And so I picked it up in earnest, and I'm like one case away from beating the game. I completely understand why this was not like localized and brought out in retail, because this is just an incredibly like offensively Japanese game. And the bizarre thing, you know,
question.
Like, yes.
Question. Is there misogyny or tentacles in it?
No. So okay. There's a little bit of misogyny. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie. Right. Like one of the new attorneys is a lady, and there are some unfair statements lobbied at her. But I don't know if they're trying to be subversive or whatnot. But yeah. So I forget where I left this off or how much I how much I like brought up. But the second case in the game, like the first real case after the tutorial one, it involves like a conflict between these two like villages / principalities or whatever that is expressed as this wrestling rivalry between wrestlers who dress up as Japanese demons, also known as yokai, and you're defending, you know, like one of them, and you know, like there's all this political stuff around it, and just everything is just so foreign. Which I don't say to be xenophobic or to express any kind of like lack of cultural curiosity, because if I was reading this in a Wikipedia article, I would probably read the whole thing, because hey, other cultures' demons are pretty cool to read about, right? But it is so unrelatable, it is so foreign that it took me. I just would read a couple of text boxes and put this game down and not come back to it for months, because there's just no inroad. There's no like hook to set. There's no, there's no point of reference, right?
Like you have to have drank the Kool-Aid on Japanese culture so hard that you're always going to enjoy this game, or just be completely alienated from it. There's no middle ground.
Yeah, or eventually get past all of the exposition and set up to the point where it's like, all right, this person was killed, and then, oh, how did the killer escape if it's a one-way locked door, and there are air vents in play, and secret chambers, and doors that only open if you, you know, move these statues one way or another. Like, once it, like, on the second day of the trial, it turns into a regular mystery. But, like, one of the defendants or one of the witnesses is a girl who just constantly slaps little Japanese warding charms on you whenever she gets like upset, like, oh, there's a demon ready to come get you. And it's like, I have no point of reference for this. So
yeah,
that was the biggest hurdle. And I thought, it's not possible for this to get any more Japanese after this, right? Like, that was just this weird little dalliance. I can get over it. Fine. Turns out chapter 3 takes place in a high school for lawyers. it is Lawyer Academy. And there are 3 suspects, and one of them is the star student in the judge track. There's one of them is a star student in the attorney track. The other one is a star student in the prosecutor track. And it's all about their friendship, and, you know, it's like, God damn it. Why are you doing this to me? And so this prompted a lot of soul searching about thank you. So Dennis threw in with John Cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
Cinnamon. Yeah, there we go. Sorry. Yeah, so like, Prompted Soul Surgery, because it's always been like super goofy, and I got turned on to Phoenix Wright well before I knew visual novels were a thing. Like, I was aware of anime, but like I wasn't quite inured to their tropes yet. Like, I was like, oh, I don't watch a lot of anime, but Phoenix Wright seems more like a goofy cartoon than something explicitly Japanese. But the trappings around this are just so hard to like ignore, right? So thankfully that, you know, lawyer high school case went a little bit better, and now I'm like talking about spacemen and stuff, which is cool. Like, I can relate to spacemen, that's fine. But I have two kind of quibbles. Like, so I have one thing I want to praise faintly about this, and another thing that I kind of want to damn faintly about it.
Okay. Other than the major thing that you damned about it.
Yes, like just there. Like, wow, okay. this is the least penetrable version of these stories, which in and of itself, like that, like personal taste will vary. If you are as intensely American as I am, it'll probably turn you off. But like it's not something that is like objectively bad. It's still a story that is presented about as well as a Phoenix Wright story has been, you know? Except it's a little bit less focused, and I don't know. Like, you can probably compare it non-favorably to previous stories and say, here's how it came up short. But like, it's a Phoenix Wright-ass Phoenix Wright game. So faint praise. I've talked about this before. The additional mechanics they add regarding, you know, finding somebody's tell when they're lying, and identifying people's kind of emotions, like psychoanalyzing them as they go along. And the mini games that those kind of bring in continue to like add new modes of storytelling to it. And I'm excited to get back to Phoenix because you do every case as a different lawyer and do the psyche locks, because it's been a while since we've done those. But yeah, like just different ways of exposing contradictions in everybody's testimonies and helping to clarify the events of what happened. That's genuinely pretty cool. And it stops it from being just a paying attention sim, and, you know, and turns it back into more of a, like, a, you know, kind of a varied experience, right? What it loses in consistency, it gains in variety, which is not inherently a good thing, like, but it does benefit from that. And, you know, it benefits from the added, like, visual fidelity, because these are 3D models now as opposed to just sprites that kind of cycle through their shit.
How does that translate? Like, it's, and maybe it made this change a long time ago. The only games I've played have had, you know, like you said, kind of the sprites, or have been very 2D.
Yeah.
Do they live well as 3D models?
Yes, they do. They're mostly pretty flat in their presentation. There's like a little bit of like moderate cell shading. Like, what that does is essentially gives them more movement and personality and a little bit more subtlety to the way that they kind of express. However, you can still tell like this is this person's anxious animation. This is this person's. It's not like full on LA noir, but it's just it's a consideration that they put in to bring a little bit more character to these characters, and that objectively enhances something that was already good about the games.
Got it. Cool. Right.
Cool. The thing that I kind of don't like, and I don't know if this is just me having grown up, it's been, you know, admittedly a long time since I played one of these. I think like the 4 years since Miles Edgeworth Ace Attorney Investigations came out. But boy howdy, do they walk you to the conclusions. I feel like in previous games, they kind of took you about 50% of the way there and left you a little bit to your own devices in terms of putting the pieces together. So they would highlight what the pieces were and then kind of leave it to you in this high stakes kind of fashion, because you have this health bar. There are only a certain number of times you can like fuck up with the conclusions you draw. But man, they like they put it right there and then turn it into, you know, like a very reduced kind of possibility space for the way things can come back together. Right. And again, this maybe could have always been the case, but I'm noticing it a lot. I'm noticing it a lot now, which is good.
You really have to try to fail
a little bit. Yeah. And it just feels like either they're making the solutions more obvious, or they've always been obvious, and I'm just really intensely aware of the vocabulary that the games use. And they haven't varied the vocabulary up enough to kind of outstrip and outpace my ability to, you know, keep up with it, right? So it's showing me fewer new tricks.
So is it that you figured out the metagame, or is it that the mysteries are getting that much simpler and more obvious?
I really couldn't answer that question. I don't know. It's a little bit like Scooby-Doo, right? Like, and knowing who killed who is not really the mystery. Oftentimes in the opening cutscene, it will show you who did it. And regardless,
that seems,
you know,
like cheating.
Well, like the trick is figuring out exactly how they did what they did and figuring out how you can prove it beyond, you know, a shadow of a doubt, right?
Sure.
I feel like our legal system would be more interesting if we adopted this. Like, at the beginning of the trial, the person just straight up confessed, yeah, I did it, but you have to prove how I did it.
Yeah. So, just like in Scooby-Doo, look at whoever owns the land, and that is probably the person who's the monster. Right? Like, the monster is always a disgruntled real estate developer. In Phoenix Wright, it is always an authority figure who looks kind of like a monster. So,
how many anime is it? It'll probably be actually a monster before too long.
Yeah. So, I dig it. I like me a visual novel. I'm just kind of noticing these seams that were not as apparent before, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of this weird thing, right? Because I don't have time. I don't. And, you know, sometimes when I'm just so worn down at the end of the day, it will just be easier to read something on my iPad until I fall asleep, you know, or pass out or something like that. I'm trying to make a conscious effort to beat and play more games. And this is very much like a way to ease out of that, because like I can play this in bed and I can play this laying on the couch. It is not like strictly a lean forward kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone needs those games.
Yeah. Cool. So that's Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Dual Destinies. Although, I guess we call them Phoenix Wright games, but Phoenix Wright has not starred in one for like four games. So, womp. David, what up?
Sure. I've been just kind of continuing on playing Gauntlet with Jala and a couple other people. So this is probably going to be a fairly short summary, but it just kind of continues to be a lot of fun. It's, you know, it's really, I don't know, a lot of the reviews kind of knocked it down, you know, saying it was too easy. And there's a certain degree to that. You know, I don't think we've ever failed a level. You know, it's something like when you come back to life, you lose gold. And as long as you have gold, you can keep coming back to life.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we've ever actually failed a stage. But, you know, just kind of the day-to-day just shooting monsters and collecting gold and fighting over who gets the crown to the end of the level. It's just a lot of fun. So I'm playing as the kind of the archer character, and it's very much turns the game into kind of a twin stick shooter.
Huh.
So yeah. It's, you know, it does a very good job. At least I've only played this one class, but you know, talking to the other people I've been playing with, does a really good job of, you know, each of the classes being you know, very, very different. I know, you know, the other one that stands out, and I think I might have mentioned this before, some is the wizard is very much, as the guy I'm playing with said, it's kind of baby's first magicka.
Mm-hmm. and that it is about, like, pattern matching and stuff.
Yes, exactly. And that's actually a really cool thing, because it's just things like, you know, me playing as kind of the roguish archer, you know, when I get into a scrape, my kind of escape ability is, you know, this diving roll that, you know, can pass over enemies. Whereas the wizard, you know, when he, you know, hits the right combination of abilities, he actually, like, turns into a fireball and, like, streaks past enemies to get out of groups. So, you know, it does a good job of, you know, having different gameplays for for each character.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I mean, theoretically, there's a storyline. We killed a mummy, so I guess that's kind of cool. But
that classic literary device, the slaying of a mummy.
Exactly. It's very much like straight up the setting is just straight up like you appear and a wizard says, get to the bottom of my dungeon and I'll give you a wish. So it's very, very basic. I think theoretically each of the characters have motivations for what they want to wish for. You know, the only one that's actually like explicitly been revealed via the voice chat is, I guess, the Valkyrie wants to bring her girlfriend back to life. So I haven't figured out what any of the other characters' motivations, but you know, presumably they have them.
Mm-hmm.
Did a real good job of, you know, the Gauntlet games have always kind of had, you know, the various banter between the characters. But I feel like this time around it's a little bit more silly. Mm-hmm. In particular, the character I'm playing, the elf, is very much just straight up like Scottish stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's pretty much his stick. So it's just fun. You know, when a character dies, the other characters will comment on it. So, you know, the warrior thinks the elf is a pansy, so he'll comment on that. Or the elf doesn't trust the wizard, so he'll make, you know, snide comments when the wizard dies. So it's just, you know, it's not necessarily the greatest game ever, but it's a lot of fun.
David, I'm going to be completely honest with you right now.
Yes.
Supper Slam is popping off.
Say that again?
Supper Slam is popping off. Ben fired back with Prawn Michaels.
Yeah, dude.
I fired out with Jake the Cake Roberts. Dennis, did you have one? I forget.
John Cinnamon.
Okay, John Cinnamon. And then Gary hits us with a triple shot: New World Order of French fries, stone kale steamed sauce tin, chowda tripper. And I'm going to throw in with a let us do Brett the Hitman tart.
See. Is this where I feel awkward because I don't think I've ever watched professional wrestling?
Neither have I, but it's cultural osmosis.
I see, it's funny because like one of my best friends, you know, my martial arts instructor, is really, really into professional wrestling, but I have no knowledge of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So something that I want to make sure gets across to people who are listening to this who might not have played Gauntlet. I watched some gameplay footage of this. This is like crazy zoomed out, top down, classic style Gauntlet, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's not Dark Legacy like character action, like zoomed in. You know,
no,
it's working
no,
on a different scale than that.
No, it's everyone. Even if you're playing like over the internet, you know, not split screen or whatever, everyone is always on the same screen,
mm-hmm.
and that can create some interesting things, particularly during the death levels, where basically this Grim Reaper is chasing you. That if you get within 10 feet of him, you just instantly die, which tends to become a problem when, say, one of your members decides to run in the wrong direction and starts stretching the screen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it's very.
It's Jala. Okay. You can say it's Jala. She acknowledges that she likes to run off in random directions.
I tend to be fairly mercenary in these games. So no, it's the motif is generally Jala has bad luck. I'm just an awful person.
Hmm.
So But yeah, it's very.
We should do a hard cut of the episode after David said that.
Oh. Eh, you know, truth hurts. No, yeah, it's very much like a reimagining of classic Gauntlet. So one of my favorite things I found new, its version of magic, the magic potions, is you can unlock various artifacts that have a certain number of uses based off of potions you find in the level. And I've managed to get the Siren's Loot that, when you use it, paralyzes all enemies on screen, but also plays the most incredibly tone-inappropriate, like, classical-like music. You know, just basically you'll be in the middle of a giant firefight, and all of a sudden you're at the orchestra.
That sounds kind of cool.
It's kind of fun, but kind of jarring. I don't know. It's a little weird suddenly, like, lullabies playing.
Oh. See, I'm imagining something like Hitman.
Oh, no, no, no. We are not talking like Ave Maria.
Okay. Yeah.
No, we are talking like, what is it, Brahms lullabies.
Yeah. Stuff in the public domain.
Huh.
Yes.
Hmm. How close are you to the end, do you think?
The mummy was the first boss out of three. So as far as I can tell, it's three bosses, and then basically it's three levels. Each level is three levels and then a boss, and each of those levels is three stages.
Hmm.
They like the number three.
That makes as much sense as any, as a way to subdivide it. So
yeah, well, I mean, if you're an evil wizard, you know, three is a complete number. How else would a wizard design its dungeon?
Yeah,
I mean, that's a rule of threes. Like,
so the wizard's a comedian.
Yes, yeah. I guess I was thinking of it more in the Torment sense, but. You know, my point of reference for that facilitates wildly between lists are funnier in threes, and also, yeah, things always exist naturally in threes. Man, that's a good game.
Wait, what? Torment?
Yeah, Planescape Torment.
Oh, yeah, that's another game I really need to play.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Mac compatible, but it is a good search away. Ever since you made the claim that there are no games on Mac, I immediately am starting to get like defensive. Because
it's more, part of it is I don't particularly like roguelikes, and it seems like
there,
the only thing
so
I can
many different kinds of games than roguelikes.
See, that's all I can find is I'm convinced that indie games only make roguelikes. I'm going to say that despite the fact that it's manifestly not true.
Yeah.
Indie gamers only make roguelike games.
It is like it,
and
it
that
is such
all
a,
that's on Mac.
It's such a weird prejudice to have.
I want to come to your place and just watch over your shoulder as you search for games just to understand what's happening.
Do you know what an apple looks like?
yeah, it's a crescent shaped fruit. It's kind of yellow, right?
Yeah, it's you know, it's the one that people throw behind them in Mario Kart. You
exactly,
know, apples.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's
what
apple.
Donkey Kong's crazy about. Did I tell you guys about the? I was following my brother home from a park here, like within the past like 3 months.
Creepy. Did he know you were following him
or
not?
Yeah. Just kind of like he drove me out to my car because of party parking or whatever. And I was following behind him to get back to the house. I just noticed something hit the road. He had taken a banana peel and thrown it out of his sunroof.
That's how you know you have a good brother.
Yeah, when he tries to get you to spin off the road. David, let's see here. Torment is compatible both with Mac OS X and Linux if you wish to run it on Ubuntu or whatever. Whatever the fuck you people do.
As you computer nerds do.
Yep. Sorry, SummerSlam is popping off. I didn't mean to interrupt this with other things. I'm happy you're having a good time with Gauntlet. Do you think you're going to see it through?
Yeah, I think so. It's one of those games that it's, you know, it's not earth shattering. It's not necessarily a great game, but I'm going to play it through. I'm going to really enjoy it, and then I'm probably never going to play it again.
Cool.
Which I feel like, you know, that's kind of, you know, maybe in some, you know, perfect utopian future, every game would be gone home. But in the real world, I feel like there's definitely a lot to be said for just a game you have fun with and then you're done.
Yeah. I don't know what I would do with a world that was just all gone home. Like, it'd be neat, but yeah.
You're done gone home.
For like a minute. It'd be neat for like a minute.
That would be like, what's the Twilight Zone where, you know, he's in the casino and always wins?
Yeah. And then he's Hitler. Futurama did that joke better.
Oh.
Yeah. Cool. You guys want to button it up?
Yeah.
So this has been a very spooky edition of The Level. Per Dennis's request, there's something I'm going to cut in here. I have not listened to it, but we're all going to try and find it now. This is an ultra spooky supercut.
The zombies now are straight up supernatural.
That sounds spooky.
I'm really
trying to put in some groundwork for our Halloween episode.
just do you want us to make a spooky supercut? Spooky supercut? Spooky supercut? Spooky supercut? Spooky, spooky, spooky,
spooky.
Giant zombie skull monster.
And now I will infect the world.
Spooky.
Giant zombie skull monster.
Cute indie games.
What? Spooky.
Giant zombie.
Cute indie games.
And now I will infect.
Cute indie games.
Spooky.
Giant zombie.
Cute indie games. Cute indie games and scarring irreparably emotionally.
Spooky.
Happy Halloween!
Yay! I'm really sorry I didn't like make that my first priority to listen to that.
It's all good. It's more appropriate on this timing.
It is. On this, the eve of the eve of the eve of Halloween. Yeah. Tell you what. Dennis, do I have your permission to distribute that as a ringtone? A free spooky holiday ringtone?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, you can put it out to Patreon donors first or whatever you want to do. I guess it'll go out if it's in the episodes then first anyway. Yeah. But I got it in my head. I was like, I wonder, and that's all material from that episode.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Commendable, sir. Very good job.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Glad you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for listening to this, our most spooky of episodes, now with that as our crown jewel. What do we have? At the top of the show, we announced DuckStream. Go to duckfeed.tv/DuckStream. Two ducks. In order to find out more about that as it goes along, that is going from the evening of November the 21st through the evening of November the 22nd. And we would really appreciate you supporting Transactive and watching some good games and goofs. Let's see here. I'm going to have some announcements relating to Hex Crank here pretty soon. I'm going to try and make that a priority again in the edges of this crazy, weird life that I live. but I've neglected that for too long, and I would like to do some more with it. So let's see what that looks like. Stay tuned. But for this show in general, thank you for listening. Tell a friend, especially if they like spooky things. We appreciate everybody with your multiplayer responses. Like us on Facebook and leave us a rating or review if at all possible. Am I missing anything, you guys?
You should look behind you right now.
Oh.
Happy Halloween.
There's a spider in your hair.
Yeah. Oh, yes. No, that's
that got surreal.
You crossed a line.
We pooped him. Yeah, do a search on SupperSlam because it's pretty good. But hope everybody has or will have had or had a safe and fun Halloween. Until next time, I am at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am at DFuria on Twitter.
I am at MoneySmith777 on Twitter.
I'm at Merkleizer on Twitter.
And he even tweeted to get it on SupperSlam.
Oh, yes, he did. Oh, snap.
That's right.
Yeah.
The silence has been broken.
Yes, it has. We've been waiting with bated breath. Oh, man.
He knew it was coming. He knew SupperSlam was coming, and he knew to hold out for it.
For 3 years.
Yeah. I'm really relieved that you broke your silence, because if things continued to go as they were, we would have had to dip into our strategic Fandango reserves. So two thoughts just crossed my mind. One is, you know, statistically, there has to be a coin flip that never landed. It just went up and never came back down. And all, and
Red Bull guy did it right before he jumped.
Yeah. It went back in time. It went back in time, and because of inflation, it became a dime.
I'm pretty sure that's how that works. That's what Star Trek taught me.
You'd have to go up in value, unless he was flipping a penny.
Oh, yeah. Well, it went forward in time.
There you go.
Yeah. The other one is, if a coin landing on its side was slightly more likely, then that effectively makes a coin a three-sided die.
Huh.